Let's return to our story in the book of Genesis, chapter number 24, about what happened after the passing of Sarah. Now, Sarah died when Abram was 137 years old. The year, if you're interested, by my calculations, is 2039 BC. He buries her in the cave of Machpelah, the first of many that will be buried here in what is now known as the Cave of the Patriarchs there at Hebron. After he buries her, Abraham becomes focused on making sure that the son of the promise, Yitzhak, Isaac, gets married and starts having those children that have been promised to come through this line. And so that is the story that we take up next, is the plan to marry off Yitzhak. Chapter 24, verse 1 says, "Now Abraham was old, well advanced in years." And yes, I already said that he's 137. That's pretty old, but he will live to be 175. So it's not nearly as old as he's going to get. Next line, "And he who is had blessed Abraham in all things." And so Abraham said to his servant, the oldest of his household, who was in charge of all that he had. Now we wonder whether or not this is Eleazar, who was mentioned earlier in the story. It's possible that it is, although since his name is not mentioned, it's just as possible that Eleazar has now passed on and someone new is taking over this role as kind of the steward, the household servant of that has the control of all the property of Abraham. So he says to this servant, "Put your hand under my thigh." Now, why does he do that? Because this is going to be a body oath. The thigh is the closest part of the body to the generational member, the sexual organs. And oaths were often taken in view of the sexual organ. This is the reason why testimony is based off the word testes. And a testament, which is the old-fashioned word for a will, is based off of that same word. So it would be totally inappropriate for this servant to touch Abraham in his private parts, but the symbolism of putting his hand simply under his thigh near that area suits the purposes of this oath. "So put your hand under my thigh, that I may make you swear by he who is the God of heaven and the God of earth, that you will not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I dwell." Now this is interesting to me. It almost feels as if Abraham thinks he's on his last leg. Now, I already mentioned he's going to live to be 175, and he's only 137 right now. But with the passing of his wife, his beloved half-sister that he spent decades with as his wife, he may be feeling his old age. He might be feeling, "I'm not much longer for this world either, and therefore I better make sure that my steward, the man that will take care of my things on behalf of my son once I pass, that he knows what I want done in regard to weddings, that I do not want my son married off to a Canaanite, a local girl. Instead, verse 4, but will go to my country and to my kindred and take a wife for my son Yitzhak." This is the reason why we had the genealogy that came up in last episode. It's because Abraham knows he has family members up there in Mesopotamia. Family members which he can presume are still tied in with the same God that he is serving. because his brothers, or excuse me, his brother and his father both seem to have converted to the faith of the one and true living God around the same time that Abraham did. They just did not leave that area and go to Canaan because that was not what was required of them. So Abraham is functioning on the assumption, if I'm going to marry my son, I want to marry him to somebody of the same faith that he has, the faith in the one true God. And the best place to do that? Back in Mesopotamia, where his brother's family is growing up. All right, so he extracts this oath from his servant. The servant said to him, well, perhaps the woman may not be willing to follow me to this land. May I then take your son back to the land from which you came? And Abraham said to him, see to it that you do not take my son back there. He who is the God of heaven, who took me from my father's house and from the land of my kindred, and who spoke to me and swore to me, to your offspring I will give this land, he will send his angel before you, and you shall take a wife for my son from there. So no, you may not take my son back to Mesopotamia if his bride-to-be wants to live there. She has to move here. She has to agree to do that. And I'm going to make arrangements for God's messenger to go with you. Now, the word angel here, we're in the habit of thinking of angels as supernatural messengers, and that's perfectly right in this context. But the point is, God is going to orchestrate this marriage proposal, this marriage arrangement. Verse 8, but if the woman is not willing to follow you, then you will be free from this oath of mine, only you may not take my son back there. So you can't take my son to Mesopotamia if she won't go and come back here with you. Then that's not on you. That's not your fault. Then you're free of this oath. And presumably, you know, just looking at what we see here, presumably the servant would then be able to secure a local woman in Canaan somewhere that would be the match for Yitzhak. Now, Abraham does not want that. He wants a woman that shares the faith. And he is also working with God on this. Again, he doesn't apparently feel up to traveling himself. And he feels a little bit to me as if he doesn't even know if he's going to live through the time it takes for this trip to take place. Verse number 8. Verse number 9. So the servant put his hand under the thigh of Abraham, his master, and swore to him concerning this matter. So he takes the oath. Then the servant took 10 of his master's camels and departed, taking all sorts of choice gifts from his master, and he arose and he went to Mesopotamia to the city of Nahor. Now, Nahor is about 450 miles north from Beersheba as the crow flies, and that's going to be probably 500 plus miles along the typical route. And at a comfortable pace, say between 20 and 25 miles of the day, it's going to take him 3 weeks to a month to get there, and then a while to accomplish the marriage contract, and then 3-4 weeks to come back. So we're talking about a couple months, maybe 3 months, to make this betrothal trip. And that might be why Abraham is giving such specific instructions to the servant, because he doesn't think he might even survive that long. Now, he's wrong if that's the case. He's going to live a good long time after this, but you might appreciate that he's kind of feeling down right now. So on to the city of Nahor. The servant made the camels kneel down outside the city by the well of water at the time of the evening, the time when women go out to draw water. So the ladies are coming out to get the water they're going to need for this evening's cooking, and then all the drinking water through the night, and any cleaning water that might be needed through the night, and then something that they're going to probably need first thing in the morning. So they're coming out to get great big containers of water and take them back in. The entourage settles down right next to the water. Now, normally, they would start drawing the water for their camels as soon as they arrived. But this man, who may have grown up in Abraham's employ, has an appreciation for the supernatural. He has an appreciation for the faith of his leader, Abraham. And so he decides to make a test in order to find the right lady. Verse 12, he said, "Oh, he who is God of my master Abraham, please grant me success today and show steadfast love to my master Abraham. Behold, I'm standing by the spring of water, and the daughters of the men of the city are coming out to draw water. Let the young woman to whom I shall say, 'Please let down your jar that I may drink,' and who shall then say, 'Drink, and I will water your camels,' let her be the one whom you have appointed for your servant Isaac. And by this I shall know that you have shown steadfast love to my master." So I want you to appreciate exactly what he's hoping this woman will volunteer for. It's one thing for you as a stranger at a well to ask for a drink of water for yourself personally. Most ladies would probably be quite happy to help you out because of the love of strangers idea. But he is asking God to cause the right woman to volunteer, not just to give him a drink of water, but to water all 10 of these camels. Now, here's what I have discovered regarding the idea of camels. And that is this, that a camel can go quite a few hundred miles without water. About 100 miles, apparently. But when they do fill back up again, when they do drink, they can sometimes drink 30 gallons of water in one 15-minute session of drinking. So that's a lot of drinking. And we've got 10 camels here. So if those 10 camels drink 300 gallons of water together, and this woman is using about a 5-gallon bucket in order to accomplish the watering of these animals. And remember that 5 gallons of water is going to be about 40 pounds worth of water. That means it's going to require her to do about 50 trips between the water trough where the animals are at and the well itself. And if it's a bucket well where she's letting the bucket down by a rope, then she's got to let it down, scoop up the water, bring it back up again, and then carry that bucket over, dump it into the trough, come back and repeat the process. And 60 times she's going to have to repeat the drawing process if she's going to fill up these 10 thirsty camels. Would you volunteer for that? I mean, think about the time effort. If it takes her 5 minutes for each trip, because it's possible that she may have to go down into the well. It might be one of those types of wells where the water's down at the bottom of a spiral staircase that you go down to, dip it, and then back up again. It's going to take her probably several hours to shift this much water. So that's what this guy is talking to God about, saying basically, God, I want you to point me to the right woman by when I ask her for a drink, she volunteers for several hours of hard labor. And again, I say to you, I sincerely doubt most of us would volunteer to water 10 thirsty camels. And yet, that is exactly what happens. Verse number 15. Before he had finished speaking, so he's still in the process of finishing his prayer, behold, Rebekah, who was born to Bethuel, the son of Milcah, the wife of Nahor, Abraham's brother, came out with her water jug on her shoulder. So here comes Abraham's grandniece, a granddaughter of his brother. Now, her name, Rebekah, means hobble. It's the idea of tying up your animal so that it doesn't wander off. So it's that's probably kind of funny. It must have had something to do with how he hobbled the heart, or how she hobbled the heart of her parents, tying them up in love. But here she comes, getting ready to get some water just for her evening chores. Verse 16, the young woman was very attractive in appearance, a maiden whom no man had known. So she is a virgin. She is not engaged to be married. So she's still fairly young, is the impression we get. Maybe a teenager. She went down to the spring and filled her jar and came up. So that sounds as if it's not a bucket drawing well, but rather one of those spiral staircases you have to go down into. Verse 17. Then the servant ran to meet her and said, please give me a little water to drink from your jar. And she said, drink, my lord. And then she quickly let down her jar upon her hand and gave him a drink. And when she had finished giving him a drink, she said, I will draw water for your camels also until they've finished drinking. So she actually does volunteer. So she quickly emptied her jar into the trough and ran again to the well to draw water, and she drew for all his camels. And the man gazed at her in silence to learn whether he who is had prospered his journey or not. Because you see, it's not that she has not finished the task yet until all the camels have drunk everything that they need to replace the water they've used up on their trip. If she stops partway through the process, then his prayer has not been answered. So he just kind of stands by and watches to see whether or not she'll finish the task. And she does. And I suggest to you, it's got to be a couple hours later before she's finished. And when the camels had finished drinking, the man took a gold ring weighing a half shekel, a few grams, and two bracelets for her arms weighing 10 gold shekels, and said, please, tell me whose daughter you are. Is there room in your father's house for us to spend the night? So he gives her a present. Now, this present she could have perceived as a big thank you for all the hard work that she's put into getting the camels watered. But he's asking, is it possible that your father could put us up? They didn't have, you know, all the fancy hotels and motels back at that time. You had to have to find your own place to sleep at night. And so asking around was the way to do that. So what's her answer? She said to him, well, I'm the daughter of Bethuel, the son of Milcah, whom she bore to Nahor. Now that is important, because this servant of Abraham would have been given the genealogical information about Abraham's family, the information that Abraham had received about his relatives' family increase. And so when she introduces herself, he would have recognized her name from that family tree list and would have recognized it as a potential bride for Yitzhak. And so his request to God for a sign has panned out very, very well, because this is exactly the woman that was on the list. She added, "We have plenty of both straw and fodder and room to spend the night." And so the man bowed his head and worshipped He Who Is and said, "Blessed be He Who Is, the God of my father Abraham, who has not forsaken his steadfast love and his faithfulness toward my master. As for me, He Who Is has led me in the way to the house of my master's kindred." So he just comes out in praise, comes out in thankfulness that God is involved in the whole process here. And then the young woman ran and told her mother's household about these things. So she's all excited about it. It's like, oh my goodness, Uncle Abraham's servant has shown up here. And she is passing all this information along to her family. And Rebecca had a brother whose name was Laban. Laban ran out toward the man to the spring. Now, their dad will be in the story here, but it is brother Laban, as we usually say it, who is going to take a key role in the arrangements for the future wedding. And then he's going to be an important person in a later story as well. So here he is, the first time we meet him. As soon as he saw the ring and the bracelets on his sister's arms and heard the words of Rebecca, his sister, "Thus the man spoke to me," he went to the man. And behold, he was standing by the camels at the spring. So he then said, "Come in, O blessed of He Who Is. Why do you stand outside? For I've prepared the house and a place for the camels." So the man came to the house and unharnessed the camels, gave straw and fodder to the camels, and there was water to wash his feet and the feet of the men who were with him. And food was then set before him to eat. But he said, "I will not eat until I have said what I have to say." And then he said, "Speak on." So now he gets the chance to tell the story. Here's his testimony, as it were. So he said, "I am Abraham's servant, and He Who Is has greatly blessed my master, and he has become great. He has given him flocks and herds, silver and gold, male servants and female servants, camels and donkeys. And Sarah, my master's wife, bore a son to my master when she was old, and to him he has given all that he has." So some of this would have been a story probably told within the family here in Mesopotamia about Uncle Abraham, or Abram, and Aunt Sarai, who headed off south to follow the guidance of the God that had called them all to be followers of him. But now they're hearing the rest of the story about how eventually there was a boy born. And now that boy is grown, and it is time for him to inherit everything, but he needs a wife. Verse 37, "My master made me swear, saying, 'You shall not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites in whose land I dwell, but you shall go to my father's house, to my clan, and to take a wife for my son.' And I said to my master, 'Perhaps the woman will not follow me.' But he said to me, 'He Who Is, before whom I've walked, will send his angel with you and prosper your way. You shall take a wife for my son from my clan and from my father's house. And then you will be free from your oath when you come to my clan. And if they will not give her to you, you will be free from my oath.' And so I came today to the spring, and I said, 'Oh, He Who Is, the God of my master Abraham, if now you're prospering the way that I go, perhaps, behold, I'm standing by the spring of the water. Let the virgin who comes out to draw water, to whom I say, "Please give me a little water from your jar to drink," and who will say to me, "Drink, and I'll draw for your camels also," let her be the woman whom he who is has appointed for my master's son. And before I'd finished speaking in my heart, see, he was doing his prayer in his mind, behold, Rebekah came out with her water jar on her shoulder. She went down into the spring and drew water, and I said to her, please let me drink. She quickly let down her jar from her shoulder and said, drink, and I will give your camels drink also. So I drank, and she gave the camels drink also. And then I asked her, whose daughter are you? And she said, the daughter of Bethuel, Nahor's son, whom Milcah bore to him. And so I put the ring on her nose and the bracelets on her arms. This is where we found out it was a nose ring. And then I bowed my head and worshipped he who is, and blessed he who is, the God of my master Abraham, who has led me by the right way to take the daughter of my master's kinsman for her son. Now then, if you're going to show steadfast love and faithfulness to my master, tell me. And if not, tell me, that I may turn to the right hand or to the left. So he says, this is my story. This is what's happened. It's a miracle. It's an amazing thing. Rebekah here volunteered to water the camels. And that's where I knew she was the one. Now it's up to you. Are you going to let her come with me to Canaan to be the wife of my master Yitzhak? Or are you going to refuse that? Because if you're going to refuse that, then I need to go around up here among other relatives to find the right woman. But I think he's impressing upon them that this is the right woman. And so Laban and Bethuel answered and said, the thing has come from he who is. We cannot speak to you, bad or good. Behold, Rebekah is before you. Take her and go, and let her be the wife of your master's son, as Yahweh, or as he who is, has spoken. And so they agree. This sounds very much like the God that we serve is involved in it. And we are not in a position to deny what God wants done.